I work with computers for a living, and I end up doing a lot of tech support. And unlike a lot of people that do tech support, I really don't mind working with people that don't know anything, and I mean anything, about computers. Well, we can't all know everything about everything, and there's lots of stuff about it that's complicated, so it doesn't bother me when people don't know stuff. What I'm not too crazy about are the people that don't know anything about how to use their computer, and they blame the maker of the computer, they blame the maker of the software, and they blame me because I am the one talking to them. And they blame everybody else for what is ultimately their own lack of knowledge. And I have a theory about that particular type of person, the person that gets angry when they can't use their computer. I think that they look at the computer screen and they think to themselves that that looks an awful lot like a TV screen. And they know how to use their TV because that's easy to use, because it's got basically five buttons: power on, channel up, channel down, volume up, volume down. That's easy. If you know those five things, you can use your television. So they turn on their computer, which has this magic box with pictures that's a lot like a TV, and they expect it to be that easy to use. And then they get mad when it turns out that it isn't. But the question is, why should anybody in their right mind think that a computer would be as easy to use as a television? Why should they think they should be able to just sit down with no training, no education, no effort, and just start using the thing when it's millions of times more powerful than the computers that sent rocket ships to the moon? I mean, this attitude makes about as much sense as me picking up a newspaper written in Chinese and then getting mad at the printer because I don't know what it says. I mean, the analogy I use to my customers when they start to get mad is, you didn't hop in a car for the first time, start the thing up, and drive on down to the DMV and say, I'm ready to take my test because I want my license today. People don't do that. We recognize there's complicated things that you have to learn. You got to read the manual. For kids in public school, you got to take a training class. You got to take a safety class. You got to get a permit that allows you to start learning. And then it takes practice, especially if you're learning to use a manual transmission. But you got to learn how to parallel park. You got to learn how to drive on the hills of San Francisco. Or maybe you got to learn how to drive when there's heavy fog in Pacifica. Or if you're going to go in a snow country, how you drive on icy roads. There's all these things that you have to learn, and then even after you've learned them up here, you still have to practice it physically so that your body gets it all coordinated together. And so most people spend weeks or even months practicing driving before they go down to the DMV and say, I'm ready to get my license. So why do we think that we can just jump right in and operate a computer without any sort of effort? Why do we even think we should be able to do that? The fact is that there are many areas of life that we recognize require effort, require planning, require learning, and require practice. You want to play professional football when you grow up? You don't wait until you get to college to start learning how to play football. I'm pretty sure that there's nobody who never picked up a football in their life before they were 18 that ended up learning how in college and then playing in the NFL. It doesn't work that way. You want to be a musician when you grow up? You don't wait until then to pick an instrument. You start now so that by the time you are grown, you already know how to play and can actually play, and people might even pay you to do it. That's not when you start learning. If that's what you want to be, you got to start the process early. So how come with some things we think it's pretty obvious? We think it's obvious that if you want to play professional ball, you got to be practicing all along. There's things, it's clear to us that it takes a lot of hard work and preparation to be proficient. And then there's so many other things that we just assume we can just dive right in and we'll just muddle through it. And the reason that we probably think that is, there are a lot of things that once you reach a certain level of general knowledge, you can just sort of dive in. Because you've already gone through, if you've already gone through 12 years of schooling and possibly years of college and everything else, there's basic things about living your life that you realize, and you can apply those to certain things. Even if you've never done a thing before, all your knowledge and experience up till now will maybe carry you through that. And then when we're faced with something that's it's really obvious that it's well and beyond our level of ability, we recognize we'd have to do a lot of work to succeed at such a thing. If you've never done gymnastics and you're 20 years old, you don't just hop on the bar and start trying to do flips. You know, you'll break your neck. And you know that. You know that that's something that takes a lot of work. But then there's all this stuff in the middle. It's not immediately clear that it's going to take a lot of work. And so we sort of think that we can just do it, that we'll just start to do it and just kind of muddle through, and things will work themselves out and happen, and it doesn't work that way. Like the people that think that they can use their computer because they can use their TV, they think that this is something that they can just sort of figure out, and it turns out that for people without any sort of background in computers, that they can't do it. We have to plan things. We have to learn in order to be able to do things. So my lesson here is on planning now who you want to be in the future. Now that sort of takes for granted that the person that you want to be in the future is a good person and a strong person. If the person that you want to be in the future is lazy and ignorant and weak, well, you don't have to do that much planning. So that'll just kind of come naturally. Like we learned in the previous lesson, you know, if you do nothing, you'll get right into the mold of the world. That's the default. It's the world's mold. So if you want to be lazy and if you want to be ignorant, if you want to be weak, don't do any planning, and it'll happen. But being a good person, being a strong person, being the sort of person that does what's right, that doesn't come accidentally. That comes because you choose it. And that's not an easy thing to do. If it was easy, everyone would do it. Step one, choose a goal. The first thing to do is to decide now what sort of person you would like to be in the future. Now, how far you cast your gaze is up to you. Pick something that's not too far in the distance. If you're 15, don't necessarily plan now for when you're 50, but maybe for when you're 20. If you're just starting high school, maybe you think about what are you going to be like when you're just starting college? If you're in college, what are you going to be like a year after you graduate? If you're already out of school, what are you going to be like after you've been married for 4 years? What are you going to be like when you have kids? What are you going to be like at that point in your life? And when you look at yourself in your mind's eye and you think, what kind of person do I want to be? And I don't mean necessarily what kind of job you want to have or where you want to live or if you own a house or rent or anything like that. But what sort of character do you want to have at that point in your life? Do I want to be addicted to drugs 5 years from now? Do I want to be hardworking? Do I want to pepper my speech with swear words? Do I want to have a reputation among my peers for honesty? Do I want to have played the field and slept with many partners? Do I want to be attending all the services of the church? Do I want to be overweight and out of shape? Do I want to be married to a faithful Christian or an unbeliever? So only you can decide what you would like to be. You can't figure out what to do now to achieve your goals then if you don't know already what your goals are. I've seen a lot of people do a lot of things that they regretted because they didn't make their minds up early on what sort of person they really wanted to be. Do you want to commit fornication or do you want to save yourself for marriage? That's a choice mainly for young people, because by the time you're not young anymore, you've already made that choice. But when you're still young, that's a choice to make. and it has lifelong repercussions, not only for you, but for the one you eventually marry if you end up getting married. That's a choice you really need to make before you even start dating somebody. If you don't have a strong opinion on that question, until you're sitting in the back seat at Inspiration Point with somebody that you're attracted to, then it's pretty much too late at that point to make a decision. That decision's already been made for you. The society we live in, the mold of the world, encourages fornication. So if you don't make up your mind that you're going to abstain from it, then you're basically choosing to commit it. You either make your mind up early on, I'm not going to do that, this is where my boundaries are, or later on you find out after the fact what your boundaries were after you've already crossed them. Young Christians don't fall victim to fornication because they chose who they wanted to be, and who they wanted to be was a fornicator. They didn't consciously decide that. Rather, they just didn't really make a choice at all. But when it comes to right and wrong, not making a choice is a choice. So step one is choose your goal. Decide who you want to be. With your conscious mind, make a decision and take control of your life. Because if you don't choose consciously and say, I decide with my will what I will do with my life, then instead you're letting your subconscious choose. You're letting your gut just kind of do what it wants. And the thing about your gut, your belly, when it makes the decisions for you is it has its own set of desires and weaknesses and fears, and what it chooses, what you're going to find out down the road, isn't what you really wanted. Because it only knows what it wants right now. It only knows what feels good right now, what's desirable right now. It's pretty terrible about figuring out what's best for you long term. So who's in charge? Is your will in charge? Do you choose what you do with your life? Or do you just kind of lead with your gut and let it take you where it will? So step one, decide. Make a choice about who you want to be. Step two, realize that you need a plan. Once you have a goal in mind, you should realize you're not going to just get there by accident. It's great to know who you would like to be. It's another thing to actually formulate a plan on how to actually achieve it. There's an old saying that failing to plan is planning to fail. Again, think of somebody who wants to play in the NFL, but they don't practice. They're not planning to play professional ball. They are, in fact, planning to not play professional ball. People that end up addicted to drugs, ruining their health and relationship, they didn't plan to do it that way. But what they did was plan, what they didn't do was plan to not do it that way. Criminals in prison, they didn't plan on going to prison, but they sure didn't plan on staying out of prison. People that commit adultery and end up ruining their marriages, they usually didn't plan on doing that, but what they didn't do was plan to be faithful. Christians that have children outside of wedlock usually didn't decide that that was a good idea, but they didn't plan well enough to not do that. So we've got to have a plan. We've got to have things that we can do to make our goal happen, because it won't just come along on its own. Step three. Realize you need to start working on that plan right now. So we have a goal. We know we need a plan to meet the goal. The thing we have to remember is we have to get started right now. Nobody who was ever a success said, I wish I'd waited around longer before starting to work towards my goals. People that succeed, they don't look back and wish that they'd spent less time working towards success and more time goofing off. More than one young person has said, I know I need to be a Christian, but I'm going to just have fun first. And then when I'm older and I have it out of my system, then I'll become a Christian. Of course, the vast majority of the people who think that way don't end up becoming Christians. And of the ones that actually do, Every single one of them wishes they hadn't thought that way. Wishes they regret having put it off. No one says when they become a Christian, when they come up out of the water in baptism, with their sins forgiven, nobody says, I'm sure glad I waited till now to do this. Nobody ever says that. It's always, I'm happy that I've done this, although I wish I'd have done it sooner. If your goal is to be physically fit when you're 30 years old, do you just eat whatever you want until you're about 25 and out of shape and then start trying to eat right and exercise? Just so that when you finally get fit again, you can go, boy, I'm sure glad I spent all those years eating junk. People don't do that. Whoever does manage to come back from being unfit, every single one of them says, I wish I'd developed good habits in the first place. Whatever benefits you think there are from putting off what you know that you need to be doing right now, whatever benefits there are, they're going to be insignificant when you look back on them later. Moses chose to suffer with the people of Israel rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, because it's just a short time. Sure, sin is pleasurable. If it wasn't, we wouldn't be doing it ever. It would be easy to choose to not sin if there was no pleasure in it. But the pleasure with sin only lasts a little while. The pleasure of procrastination, the pleasure of living for entertainment instead of doing responsibilities. That pleasure only lasts for a little while, and then after it comes regret. And after it, with age and experience come, if only I'd known then what I know now. How many times have you ever thought, you know, maybe that there was a show called Quantum Leap, where you know somebody could leap to a previous person, you know, and the original thing was you were going to leap back to your own life, you know, so you would take your, say, 30-year-old brain and put it into your 15-year-old body, and you would know everything from the future, and then you could make all the right decisions, you know, every dumb thing you did when you were 15, you'll know better now, and you'll make better choices, you know. I don't know, how many people have ever thought of something like that, you know, if I could go back in time and I knew what I know now, I would do things differently. That's a pretty common thing. Maybe not as nerdy and science fiction-y as I like to view it, but that idea of, I wish I could go back and do it over again, that's very common. And we don't have that ability. You will never be able to go back and do it over again. But what you can do is you can think about what you'll be like in the future. And you can think about the things that you might regret in the future. And you can choose to get it right the first time. I can't go back and redo it, but years from now, what am I going to wish I was doing differently right now? And now is when I have the opportunity to actually make a difference. So if I look in the future and I see the person that I want to be, I have to start work today if that's who I actually want to become. Step 4, recognize your strengths and your weaknesses. Planning on being a good person in the future means you have to do things now that build upon your strengths and minimize your weaknesses. And in order to do that, you have to actually know what your strengths and weaknesses are. This is the step that's always been pretty easy for me, simply because I'm a really introverted person. Other people come and go. I'm always right here with me. So I might not understand anybody else very well, but at least I understand me because I'm always here. That doesn't mean that the rest of the steps in this process are easy. It can be hard to follow through on the stuff that you know to do, but at least I can know what I need to do. But not everybody's like that. Maybe even most people aren't as sort of self-focused as me. When people are used to thinking about other people and external things and they end up not spending a lot of time examining themselves, they can end up doing things like being surprised by their own behavior. Doing something and thinking, why did I do that? But examining ourselves is a necessary step to reaching our goal. Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians, therefore he that thinks he stands, take heed lest he fall. We have to know how strong we are so that we can prepare for all the temptation that's going to come our way. We all have different sins that we're inclined to do. So along with looking at who you want to be in the future, maybe we should also look at who we could be in the future if we didn't work at it. Imagine if life just kind of got to you and you gave up caring much about doing right and doing wrong and just started doing whatever you felt like doing instead of what you should be doing. What are the sorts of things that you in particular would end up doing? For some people, if they didn't have any guidance as right and wrong, if they're just like, you know, I don't care about doing right and wrong anymore, I'm just going to do what I consider fun, where that takes them might be involved, they might get involved in drug culture, you know, that might be what's a temptation for them and the sort of thing that they would naturally sort of gravitate towards if they didn't control themselves. And for other people, that's not even a temptation. Like it really, there's nothing to be proud of for them not taking drugs because they don't even want to take drugs. It doesn't take a bunch of willpower to resist it. They have no interest in it. So everybody's got their own things that can take them down. For some people, if they didn't have the guidance of the scriptures, they'd be involved in a life of fornication. For another, they could just simply let the cares of the world just get you distracted to where you only thought about, you know, sort of physical things, and you didn't lay up any treasure in heaven. You didn't do any work in the church. You just kind of did, you know, everything was you, house, job, car, family, but nothing spiritual. So we've all got our different roads that we could go down if we let ourselves. So when you take a look at the person that you want to be, think about the person that you might end up becoming if you don't take steps now to prevent it, if you were to give in to your weaknesses. I don't mean slip up now and then, because we all do that. But if you were to just give up on doing right, where would that take you? And look at that person and realize that's the person that Satan wants you to be. So there's your contrast. There's the person that Satan would like you to become, and in the other part of your mind, you hold on to the person that you want to become. Step 5, get your want-to fixed. It's one thing to know what you need to do. It's another thing to actually do it. Understanding, that's the easy part. Actually doing it, that's hard. That's also the part that's hardest to teach anybody else. People that eat unhealthy food and don't exercise, that end up overweight or obese, it's not that they don't understand about eating right and exercising. It's very easy to understand, but it's really hard to do. There's a multi-billion dollar industry that sprang up to offer shortcuts to people, some way to be healthy without exercising and without watching calories, and none of them work. Not a single one works because there is no easy answer. There's no other way other than the simple to understand and yet so hard to do. Eat healthy food and get exercise. I know how to do that. I know how to lose weight. I've lost weight lots of times. I can lose weight if I want to. Keeping it off, that's another thing. But I know how to do it. Actually doing it, that's a whole different kettle of fish, as they used to say. So if you're struggling with something in your life, the real problem isn't that you don't know what you need to be doing, it's you need to get your want-to fixed. You have to want to do what you need to do. Here's the thing to keep in mind. Anything that you do in life, you do because you choose to do. There's nothing that you do that you didn't choose to do. Even the stuff that you don't want to do. You wanted to do it more than what your alternatives were. You wanted to do it more than face the consequences of not doing it. When I was in school, I didn't want to do my homework, but I did it sometimes. Not because I really just loved homework, but because I at least wanted to do it more than I wanted to fail out of a class or get yelled at by my parents. So even though I'm doing something that I say, I don't want to do this, but I'm doing it anyway, it's because I do want to do it more than those other things. If I'm changing a flat tire on the side of the road in the rain in the middle of the night, I don't want to be doing that. But I want to be doing that more than I want to spend the rest of my life sitting in the car. So I get up and I do it. So even the things that you think that you don't want to do, you still want to more than something else. So everything you do because you want to. The thing is, human beings are really fantastic about having multiple conflicting desires. I mean, think about most of the people that smoke say they want to quit, or at least a huge number of them. You go, well, why don't you then? Quit smoking. Don't pick up a cigarette. How hard is that? Well, it turns out it's a lot harder than people that don't smoke realize. Because even though they want to quit, they also want to keep smoking. Multiple conflicting desires. I want a cigarette. I want to quit smoking. As long as the desire to keep smoking is stronger than the desire to quit, guess what's going to happen? Here's how much I want to quit. Here's how much I crave my cigarette. Cigarettes win. It's not a lie that I want to quit smoking, but I don't want to bad enough. Not more than this. When you finally do want to quit, you go, I want to quit, I want to quit. And you psych yourself up, I want to quit, I want to quit. Oh, I want to quit. And this is how much I want smoking. Boom, you quit. Unfortunately, the desire has changed intensity. Now that I've been quitting for a while, my desire for a cigarette is really increasing. Boy, a cigarette would taste good right now. Oh, I slipped and I had a cigarette. Well, now that I've just fulfilled my craving, I don't crave one as much. And now I want to quit more than I want a cigarette again. And now oh, guilt. Oh, why didn't I have that cigarette? I want to quit this much. Why wasn't that enough? So our desires just fight each other with what we want to do and the other thing that we want to do. So you want things and you backslide and you bounce. And some people, they just bounce back and forth between their desires for their entire life. They say things like, I want to quit. And you go, well, yes and no. Yes, you do have the desire to quit, but no, you don't really want to quit. Not bad enough to do it. Getting your want to fixed means examining, finding out what it is that you really want versus what you just wish you wanted. People that want to quit smoking but don't, they don't want to quit smoking enough. They wish they did. They want to quit smoking. But they don't actually want to enough, or they would. So, I mean, I want to eat healthy food. But at the moment, I don't really want to do that. What I want to do is I want to go back there and eat pizza and donuts because that tastes good. The only way to eat healthy is to adjust my desires. I have to fix my want to when it comes to what I eat. When it comes now to planning on who you want to be, the hardest part of all is getting your want to fixed. It's all very well and good to know what you want to be and know you have to start now to accomplish it. But actually changing yourself, changing your own desires, that's hard. And that's the task of everyone here. Unfortunately, this is kind of where the advice section peters out a little bit, because only you can motivate you. Nobody else can give you step-by-step instructions on how to change your own desires. That's something that you have to figure out for yourself. I do have one clue. There's an old joke. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? And the answer is practice. How do you become the person that you want to be? You practice. You act now like you're already the person that you want to become. You force yourself now to do the things that you want future you to do on their own. If I hold in my mind how I want to be in the future and future me exercises and eats healthy, then there's not really any way to make that happen unless I start doing it now. So I make myself eat healthy food even though I don't really want to. There's no magic button that'll make me start craving carrot sticks instead of chocolate bars. But if I start acting now like the person that I want to be, I can eventually become that person over time because I'll have developed a good habit. We don't usually develop bad habits instantaneously. Good habits take time too. Unfortunately, they're also a lot more work. If good habits were easy, we would all do them. So suppose that what you want is to be an honest person. Maybe you know an honest person in your life, and he doesn't think up lies all the time and then just not say them. He really does just behave in a straightforward way. When somebody asks him the question, he doesn't think up a lie and then decide, well, I won't tell a lie, I'll tell the truth. He just comes out with the truth because he's an honest, straightforward person, and it's just a reflex to tell the truth. And maybe that's not the case for everybody. Maybe other people have a motive to lie to people. I've talked to people who just the concept of telling the truth for 48 hours was just, they said they couldn't do it. They were so used to telling lies in their life that even just 2 days without telling a lie, that was just struck them as an impossible goal. So maybe that's an issue. Maybe that's something that you have an issue with, telling the truth. But you want to be an honest person. So you start now by telling the truth, even though you still have a motive to lie. That doesn't make you an honest person right away, but it's a step on the goal to becoming one. Your goal isn't to just simply not tell lies. Your goal is to not have to struggle anymore between truth and falsehood, to not have to deal with guilt over deceit. So you start out by doing the physical action, even though the motive in your heart might not be there yet. But you find out that as you continue making yourself tell the truth, even when lying would be easy and convenient, over time you get used to the idea of telling the truth. It's not so crazy now. And I've talked to lots of people who telling the truth was just crazy. But you, after a while, after you get used to it, after you've been making yourself do it, you know it's not that crazy to just tell the truth. And then someday the day comes when someone asks you something and you tell them the truth, and then later on you realize you didn't have to make yourself tell the truth. It just happened. I didn't have to say, I won't lie, I won't tell a lie. It just didn't even occur to you to lie anymore because you'd finally just achieved the goal of honesty through repetition, through practice. Practice acting like who you want to be, and eventually you can become that person. Get used to the idea of that being not just a fantasy of a future you someday, but the person that you really are making yourself become. Now this lesson, planning now who you want to be, this applies to people of any age. Because it's never too late to work towards becoming a better person. But it's especially relevant for young people because in the next few short years, you're going to make choices that will shape who you are for the entire rest of your life. And I just want to go over a few practical applications, choices that you really need to make now and not later. We talked earlier about people that don't make the decision whether to commit fornication or not until they're already in the backseat of a car with somebody. That's not when you decide whether you're going to follow the scriptures about fornication or whether you're going to follow the world. If you're already in that position, you've already made that choice by not making a choice. So we're going to look at choices that you want to make right now. So number one, sex. American society encourages you, doesn't just permit, it encourages you to have sex outside of marriage. The Bible says you're supposed to wait until you're married. Well, what are you going to do? If you don't make a choice, you're siding with the world. If you choose to go with what God said, then you have to really make up your mind to do it. I mean, you have to really psych yourself up and not just think about the choice, say, okay, I made that choice, and go on with your life, do-do-do-do-do. You have to continually remind yourself that that's the choice you made and that's the person that you are. Because the fact is, the sex drive is a natural urge, and it's strongest in young people because that's when it shows up. And it's hard to control without having a strong will. So you've got all these sort of, all the cards stacked against you. The world's encouraging you, your body's encouraging you, and on the other hand, you have what the Bible says. So if you're going to side with the Bible, you got to make up your mind, and you've got to stick to it, and you have to decide that that's who you're going to be. And if you are going to choose to wait, that affects your choices in other ways. That affects the sorts of people that you can date. Doesn't make any sense to say I'm going to wait until marriage and then date somebody who doesn't care about waiting to marriage. That's dumb. Can a man take fire into his bosom and not get burned? If you're serious about doing right, you make up your mind now, you're not going to end up in the backseat at Inspiration Point. You're not even going to be there. Number two, marriage. It's pretty obvious from the scriptures that God wants Christians to marry Christians. He didn't want the Jews to marry outside their nation so they wouldn't be pulled away from following God. Bible says, be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. Not that this means just marriage, but it certainly applies. What fellowship has light with darkness? Why would you, if God is important to you, want to join yourself to someone to whom God isn't important? But, if you want to marry a Christian, if that's where you see yourself, I mean, do you see yourself married to a non-believer who doesn't go to church with you so that the kids can say, but my other parent doesn't go to church, why do I have to? Is that where you see yourself? Is that your goal? Or do you want to see yourself married to a Christian? Because if that's what you want to decide, then you have to decide that now. Because who you marry is a function of who you date. So you have to think about who you're going to date. If you don't decide early on who you're going to date, and you wait until the really cute guy or really cute girl starts giving you signals or asks you out, guess what? That's when your gut takes over. That's when your feelings take over, and you go with it. So that's a decision you have to make early, before you start dating. You have to decide what your boundaries are. Otherwise, you only find out what they were after they've been crossed. Number three, health. We don't talk about this a lot, you know, necessarily, but it's something to decide. It applies because this is something to decide when you're young. If you're in public school, at least, they make you take PE. But when you get out of school, or maybe your last year of high school, they don't make you do it anymore. Nobody makes you exercise. I hated PE, so I was happy to not take it anymore. But unfortunately, I wasn't smart enough to realize that without the hated, you know, running laps every day, you fall into the normal adult American thing, which is to gain 3 pounds every year. That's what adult Americans do. They gain 3 pounds every year. It's fine when you're young. When you hit 20, and when the years start adding on, you start gaining 3 pounds every year, you realize that in 10 years, you're going to gain 30 pounds. That's not that fun. Your weight creeps up, your energy level drops, and most health problems in America are the result of people not being healthy, being overweight and under-exercised. Heart disease, number one killer still in America. And a Christian's body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. We're supposed to take care of our body. That's one of the main arguments we use when we say, don't go around doing drugs, just take care of your body. Well, if you want to take care of your body, if you want to be healthy in the future, if future you is a healthy person, then you have to start now. So soon, no one will make you exercise. If you're young now and people are still making you do exercises, the day will come when nobody makes you exercise anymore. And you either make yourself or you stop exercising, and you can see where that goes. Number four, giving. I mean, the giving we do on the first day of the week. This is, you know, and we might not often think about this as being a young people issue, but it is, and here's why. When you're young and you don't have any money, that's the perfect time to get in the habit of giving scripturally. Choose a percentage to give and stick to it. Because when you don't have any money, say you choose 10%. Well, historical reasons, even though that's, for God, considering how much God blesses us, that's not really nearly enough. But let's say you choose to give 10%. So you get 10 bucks. You know, you're young, you don't have a job, you get hold of 10 bucks. You give a dollar. All right, big deal. Now you got 100 bucks. 10 bucks. By the time you make $1,000, given $100, you're used to it. You're in the habit. You've developed a good habit. Because if you have that habit when you're young, and you build your life around giving God the first fruits of your labor, then later on, when you start making more serious money, you're used to already putting that into account. You're taking account of the fact that this much is God's, and here's what I have left to build my life around. Consider someone that becomes a Christian later in life. They're 30 years old, they become a Christian, they make $50,000 a year, and they're used to having $50,000. And they're used to spending $50,000 and ending the year with nothing, because everything that came in, they turned around and spent. Now they're supposed to find $5,000, 10% to give to God. That's 10% less that they have. That's their mortgage payment right there. Now you get to decide whether you obey God's command to give, or you move house, maybe to a cheaper neighborhood, maybe to a different state, because you can't afford the house you got. You went in with no wiggle room, and now you're a Christian, and now you're supposed to give. This is one of those things. If you choose early enough, if you choose to base your financial decisions around giving before you have any money to worry about than when you're an adult, it's the easiest thing in the world. It's so easy to obey God's command to give because it's just a habit. And you don't sit there and think, oh, what I would do with those $5,000. You don't think that way. It's just you're happy to do it. So choose now financially how you want to be. Because don't wait until you're used to your money and have to take it away to give to God. If you start out early, it being God's money makes everything else a piece of cake. Number five, hard work. My parents didn't put any responsibilities on me to speak of, especially in school. I just coasted through. When it came time to doing homework, I would do the homework in the class right before it was due. So if I was in English class, I'd be doing my, you know, trigonometry homework or something like that. You know, during history, I'd be writing my English essays. And, it's, you know, the next class, turn it in. And high school's, you know, sort of a joke as far as education goes. Even in honors classes, there's no real expectation of effort. So that was easy to coast on through. And nobody had anything to say about that. Nobody cared. Then I got to college and found out they actually expected you to work. I'm like, what is this? What are you? Well, I have things I want to be doing. I don't want to be reading textbooks. What in the world? You know, so that was a lot harder. So I had to develop actual study habits. And that was really, really, really difficult and really unpleasant. And that was one of those things that I regretted and said, I wished I'd have worked harder earlier. And I didn't think, well, sure, I have to work hard now, but at least I got to skate through the previous 10 years and just kind of goof off. I'm really glad I got that goofing off time out of my system. Now, because I have my whole rest of my life to work. So at least I got to goof off first, and now I start work. You know what? I didn't think that way. I thought, oh, this is so hard. If I had started working harder earlier, I could have eased into it a little bit more. I could have gradually worked harder and harder and harder until it got to where I was used to hard work, and it wasn't so egregious and soul-condemning. It's hard work. I really wish I'd have made the decision when I was younger to work hard, because it turns out you have to work hard at life. If you don't, you fail at life. So if you want to succeed at life, if you want to be a Christian, if you want to be pleasing to God, if you want to be a good person, a strong person, there's a lot of hard work involved. And if you do it early and you get used to it and you get in the habit of hard work, then it's all right. It becomes less hard because it's a habit. If you plan on getting married and having a family someday, let me tell you, it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. If you don't want work, then don't do it. You don't have to get married. Nobody's going to make you get married. You don't have to get married. And if you get married, you don't have to have kids. If you don't want kids, don't have kids. Nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to do it, it's a lot of work. Don't do it unless you're willing to do the work. I'm married 4 years now. I got a 3-year-old. It's a lot of work. I wish I'd have started earlier, getting used to working hard. Could ease into it. Alright, so my final point is this. Teenagers and young adults are still growing. Making changes both to body and personality is much, much easier during the formative years. If you haven't, you know, if say a person is morbidly obese at age 30, they're probably going to be that way for the rest of their life. Not always, but if you look at statistics, that's what's likely. But if you have a healthy lifestyle at 20, you have a much better shot at it. And your personality and your values, what you consider right and wrong, what you consider important to you, these kind of get solidified at a certain age. And if you're still young, this is the time when it's easiest to shape and change who you want to be instead of letting everybody else do it. The world and parents and peers and everybody else kind of push you around and you end up being who the world and your gut has made you be. You get to choose. There's a cliche about high school kids switching schools. And somebody that was a bit of a dork in their old high school showing up at a new school where nobody knows them and they can act all cool because nobody will know any different. They can act like they're way cooler than they, you know, really are. This is their opportunity. Because if you're at school and you dress a certain way and people think you're part of a certain group, you don't just show up the next day dressing a different way and trying to be part of a different group. Nobody's going to put up with that. But you switch schools, and now's your chance. You know? When you're young, that's the opportunity that you have to shape who you want to be in the future. That opportunity, it's like gold in your hand. And you never realize it when you're young. I'm almost 35. I can still change, but it's so much harder now. I can look back on my youth. You know, Steve was kind enough to remind me that it's 20 years ago that I became a Christian. 20 years, oh boy. 2 decades this July. And there's still things that I struggle with that I struggled with then. If I'd have chosen better then, I'd probably have a lot easier time of it now. So when you're young, that's when you have the best opportunity to decide now who you would like to be in the future. And of course, the most important decision of all about who you want to be is whether or not you want to be a faithful Christian. If you're not a Christian, then the most important decision you'll ever make is whether to become one or not. It's not something to put off and do later because either you won't or you'll regret it. So why not do it right the first time? If you never accept Jesus as your Lord, if you never become a Christian, then all the rest of the choices you make in life, they don't really matter very much. You're going to live your life how you're going to live it, whether for good or for ill. It doesn't make much difference because we're only here a short time, and the choice you make to become a Christian or not is going to affect your eternal destiny. If you are a Christian, but you're not yet the Christian that you want to be, then you still have opportunity. You can think of how you would actually like to be, and you can work to make that happen. Today we have an opportunity. If you're not a Christian, we got a baptistry right there to immerse you in water, and you can become one, and you can start the journey right now and not put it off. If you're a Christian and you've let things get in the way, the world, the cares, if you haven't made up your mind who you want to be, you still have that opportunity right now. This time, let us stand and sing the song that Brother William has selected.